Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Latter Day Takes. Hope you all had a good week. I know I did. Taylorsville Days, spent some time doing that. It's a great fireworks show. It's surprising. Like, they do a great job, actually, out here. I happen to live right next to the park where they do it. Very, very convenient. Had a fun time. Chilled out with some friends. Just good things all around. And then I'm really looking forward to 4th of July weekend coming up this weekend. That's going to be great. I got a family reunion kind of thing going on, so looking forward to that. Seen a lot of family I haven't seen in years. Anyway, hope y'all are doing well. Today's pod is going to be pretty interesting. We're going to talk about some hot button issues, right? Obviously, we're going to talk about abortion, and then the other one being a hair transplant. Because what doesn't go together better? What goes together better than hair transplants and abortion? Now, I brought on Dan Osler. He's a buddy of mine. He had an interesting experience out in Turkey where he got a hair transplant, and he details the whole thing. It's very impressive, actually, how he goes through everything, kind of that whole process. And I thought, you know what? That's interesting to me. I don't really know that process. If you know me, if you see me, I've got a full head of hair, so it's nothing that's really like hit me in a way that I felt like was necessary for me to get. But I know a lot of friends that talk about it, they're very open about it, that do kind of think a lot about like, hey, like, I want my hair back. So it was more kind of my opportunity to talk with Dan, his experience, and get a little bit enlightenment when it comes to what it's like to be in that position. So anyway, that's why I brought Dan on. And then with the relevance of abortion, I was like, well, we got to talk about this. I got to know your opinion. It's just too much like happening right now. I can't not ask you about this. So what you're going to hear is my own take on abortion. I'm obviously very passionate about this. I think I'm allowed to have an opinion. I don't think it's just up to women to speak about this, because we're talking about human lives here at stake, not just female lives. So I give you my take. I take about 10 minutes. That's really what I use for the kind of the news segment of the week. We just talk about that. It's just me. Then I bring Dan on, and I can't help myself. I ask Dan's opinion. We get into that about 15, 20 minutes, and then we get into his experience with the hair transplants. Dan's a good guy. I think you all will appreciate the episode. I think it's been interesting all around. And so you will not be bored this episode. I promise you that. I hope you're not bored any episode, but I know you won't be for this one. And catch me on the other side where I close it out sharing kind of a gospel thought that also kind of happens to do with the things we're experiencing right now. Also pretty relevant. I mean, it definitely has something to kind of do with abortion, but just kind of how these times are crazy. It was a scripture that I shared on social media, and a lot of people took to it. It hit them in a way that really it hit me. I mean, it was just really resonated with a lot of people. So it goes to show kind of how powerful that scripture is right now. So catch that on the other side. Hope y'all are doing well. Love y'all. I will get into my abortion take here in a bit. But first, we will throw it to Brother Joe Rogan.
Mormons are really nice people.
Totally nice.
They are the best cult.
Have you ever, under the influence of alcohol, questioned the teachings of the Mormon church?
Well, these Mormons are so nice.
Everybody's so nice. Everybody's so nice in Utah.
They're all Mormon, right?
Yeah.
So they're not most drinking. Most of it. And they're like not cussing. They're like, Slovis, you stink.
I'm afraid it was the Mormons. Yes, the Mormons were the correct answer.
Because God loves Mormons and he wants some more.
Shout out to the Latter-day Saints.
So the news of the week is really just going to be one topic. Topic I'm a little bit nervous to talk about, only because it's extremely hot button. I have not hesitated to do hot button issues before in the past, but this one seems particularly vitriolic when you share sentiment that might be against the sentiment of the other side. So this is new to me, but I want to do it, not because I want to necessarily fight, clap back, or anything like that, but I want my principles to be shown and to be known. So we're really just going to talk about the Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade last Friday. A couple things I want to say about that. With that overturning, contrary to popular belief, primarily from the left side of the aisle, by the way, this does not mean abortion is now federally illegal. It means it's up to every state to determine what they want to do with abortion, right? That's a democracy. That's what a democracy was always intended for in the first place. It should be up to the states. And Roe v. Wade was a bad decision in the first place because of its flimsy precedent, which this has been highlighted a couple times on this podcast in the past year, even in the past 8 months, I think. Those episodes do exist. There were two lawyers that came on to talk about it, and they broke down why overturning it not only made sense, but was even imminent. And that prognostication proved true just this last week. To give you an idea exactly of what I'm talking about when it means giving it back to the states, Utah specifically, their trigger law. So trigger laws are laws that take place right after the Supreme Court makes a decision. The states have these trigger laws in place, meaning that immediately these laws are now put into place. So for the state of Utah, their trigger law was this new overturning of Roe v. Wade. It does not ban birth control. It does not ban Plan B. It does not ban abortion in cases of rape, incest, life of the mother, severe fetal abnormalities. Ban removal of an ectopic pregnancy or ban removal of a miscarried baby. And there's already that narrative going out that Plan B is going to be taken off the shelves and that birth control won't be available. It's like they're not trying to force you to have children. It's not about that. They're just trying to make abortion illegal or much, much harder, or elective abortions specifically illegal, which is over 90% of abortions. What it does do is it protects the life from the moment of conception, banning elective abortion. That's all it does. That is Utah's trigger law, just for example. So on Friday, I posted something on my Instagram that was a little out of the norm for me. I don't tend to get too political, generally speaking. I primarily like to share the random happenings in my life, as well as nice thoughts, philosophical intrigue, gospel thoughts, etc. But Friday night, I'll be honest, I felt compelled because my feed had been commandeered by a bunch of pro-choice sycophants that it almost seemed like that's all that existed in the world. I was especially irked when I saw posts about how not only men can't opine on the topic, but specifically white men, which seemed ironically convenient because it was seven white men that legalized abortion on the federal level in the first place. They didn't seem to have an issue with it then, but now they do, so I don't know. So because of this blatant and irrational mentality that was overcrowding my feed, I decided to simply put this out on my Instagram story, and I quote, "A horrendous law that was determined by seven white men was just overturned by one woman, one black man, and three white men. What a great day." Yeah, I got some hate for it, but I got a lot more support, albeit quiet support. And one post in particular, one comment that I got back in particular is kind of what highlighted what I was talking about, which was, hey, it's nice to see people being willing to speak out about this, like the pro-life side, because pro-choice side. And I'm like, good. I mean, it'd be nice to have more of us do this, but good. I'm glad I can provide that for others, that there's more of us out there. I mean, this is not, like, so if it were up to social media, it would be like 90% are pro-choice and 10% are pro-life. That's not the case. It's much closer to 50-50. Much, much, much closer. And I determined this year that I won't let my fear of offending people stop me from speaking out and defending my own principles. Guess who I learned that from? Joseph of Egypt. It was Come Follow Me that kind of highlighted this aspect, where I thought, I kind of broke this down, and I was thinking, Joseph of Egypt specifically found himself in a precarious situation, right? He was a slave of Potiphar, trying to work his way up, trying to ingratiate himself in the moment, right? Who doesn't want to be appreciated for what they do? Potiphar really liked him, but Potiphar's wife liked him even more and made a pass at him. And I would imagine Joseph of Egypt, being the amazing example of obedience that he is, did not even hesitate. But I'm sitting here thinking, what could have gone through his mind? What could have gone through his mind is the fact that, hey, I don't want to offend her, and I don't want to offend Potiphar, because this guy is like, he is my livelihood. If I make him mad, I'm screwed. My life gets much harder, or maybe even more, I die. And he's like, he probably wasn't, right? Because he probably didn't even think about it. He just knew exactly what he had to do. However, for me, I'm thinking, what would I have done? And I would have been scared. I would have been scared to offend his wife, Potiphar's wife. I would have been scared to offend Potiphar. Now, I would have offended Potiphar or whatever with whatever story that she would have conjured up saying that I did, right? It wasn't necessarily about letting his wife make a pass at me. But anyway, in my head, I'm thinking, how many times have I sinned in fear of not offending others? And I actually think there's a lot of those times in my life. So it started to dawn on me, Joseph of Egypt being this amazing example, he never cared about that. It never dawned on him. The only offense he really cared about was offending God, and that's something that I'm trying to kind of take on more in my life. No time like the present to let those principles shine. I believe those are human beings that have, up to this point, been utterly dismissed, right? These babies that have been aborted. And I thank God that there are now human beings that will be born because of this new ruling / overturning of the Supreme Court. I will say I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt and assume that the majority of those who are pro-choice have not looked into the details of what happens in order for an abortion to be deemed successful. I have watched videos that illustrate what happens when a baby is aborted. Not live action videos, but more kind of like illustrations. And I encourage anybody that might be sitting on the fence to seek out these videos as well. Because they do a really good job of showing what exactly happens during an abortion. I've heard doctors who have performed abortions vividly describe in front of Congress the procedure they use in order to abort a baby. And it's among some of the ugliest things I could ever perceive. And I want to give a little bit of a warning here, because I'm about to get fairly graphic based on what I've heard. No, not over-the-top graphic, but graphic enough that it might be uncomfortable. So if you want to skip ahead, I totally get it. These babies are ripped apart limb by limb and sucked out by a vacuum that callously displays their now untethered parts while still clearly showing all of what makes up a human being. One doctor described it as if it was an arm flexing and imagined her own young son doing a similar pose, and that's what it hit her. That's when it hit her that these were actual lives they were taking because of some heinous law that was passed. In less than 30 years, we went from one political party saying abortions should be safe, legal, and rare to now people shouting that it is their right to take the life of another. And I'll be honest, that's something that I don't think I'll ever stop fighting against. I don't mean fight in a sense where I'm just looking to fight with people. I'm not. I promise you I'm not. But I am looking to let my principles shine, and this is what I believe. I believe those are human lives, and I believe that they have the right to live. I understand that there's a lot of unfortunate circumstances that take place, but there is no circumstance so unfortunate that we should be allowed to determine whether or not that life has a chance to live. All right, joining me today is a good friend of mine, Dan Osler, who's here to talk about an experience he's had going over to Europe, getting hair implants. Maybe they're called hair plugs. I don't know. We'll get to that. But first and foremost, Dan, I actually want to get your opinion on something that to me is a lot more is relevant right now, and it's something that I'm definitely talking about on this episode, and that's abortion, because I know more than anything, people want to hear two dudes talk about abortion.
Right?
No, I just like getting other people's opinions in general, and I'm just kind of curious what you think. Like, what's I don't really have a specific angle that I want to hear from you from. I'm just thinking, like, maybe you'll come up with something that I haven't heard before, things like that. So
yeah,
what were your thoughts? Like Friday, the bombshell drops. Now, granted, we kind of saw it coming because it leaked, but Friday happens, boom, it actually gets overturned. Like, what are your immediate thoughts? Like, did you have any interesting interactions or things like that?
I mean, it's funny having different conversations with a number of different people, right? I feel like a lot of people got emotionally triggered where they're super offended. How could this happen? You know, men shouldn't be making a decision about a woman's body. Well, the first thing I looked at, I think, is ironic. And correct me, I could be wrong on the exact details of this. But if you look at the SCOTUS, right, the Supreme Court of the United States of America, when Roe v. Wade was essentially, you know, passed, we had, I believe, Sandra Day O'Connor was in. We had one woman and then eight men that were in, okay? That was passed. And they're all white males. Now, when you look at it today, I think we have three people of color and we have two women, right? It's the most diverse Supreme Court we've ever had. So I think that's kind of ironic.
So one that's actually... Get. I posted that on Friday. I put that on my Instagram story because I just saw, I mean, it's interesting. This is a lot more 50-50, I think, at least nationally, than social media would like you to believe. Because I just kept on seeing post after post after post about how, like, this is such a horrible day. Like, I can't believe, like, this is happening. And, you know, the government's now deciding what women can do with their bodies, things like that. And I was like, well, all right, I'm gonna chime in. And I just said something along those lines, which was like, seven white men passed a horrendous law, you know, back in the 70s that was overturned by one woman, one black man, and three white men. What a great
Okay, so day. You saw it too, right? You noticed yeah, it too.
I agree.
So yeah. I view them, I call them logical fallacies, right? Where you have them on the left and on the right. Now, if anyone wants to know, yes, I'm very conservative. Like, that's fine. I'm very conservative in pretty much all my approaches. However, I do like to look at both sides, right? I've learned I'm ignorant unless I do look at both sides. I will watch all different news media outlets. I laugh at both of them. Others, I'm like, cool, this is spot on, right? And so that's really what I look at. I go, okay, where's the logical fallacy, right? I look at it where you have on the left where it's, you know, my body, my choice, but then that doesn't uphold when it came to vaccines or the mandates, my body, my choice. But then you also have anybody as a woman, right? If you identify as a woman, how it is. But then now, if I identify as a woman, I don't have the choice. I can't say anything. So then it goes back to the biological aspect of the XX chromosome and the XY chromosome. So I just feel like there's inconsistencies, and we've got to have consistencies. If not, like, where are we actually standing up, right? And so I was really happy that it was overturned personally. I don't think it ever should have been passed. I think that it should have always been there with the states. And when you look at the laws, I mean, if you look at Utah right now, I'll have to pull up the exact law of what it is, but I'm pretty sure, correct me while I pull this up, what are the exact laws here in Utah as I pulled up? I'm just going to look here real quick.
Let's look at Utah's laws. Let's see what Utah is specifically said.
Okay, so if you pull it up, you look at Utah's trigger laws, it does not ban birth control, which is what everyone says. Oh, we've banned birth control.
Everyone was saying that. Yeah, it's true. Right? Yeah.
It does not ban Plan B, and this is for Utah specifically, right? I mean, there's other states that are going to have different things, right? Now, it does not ban abortion in cases of rape, incest, life of the mother, or severe fetal abnormalities. Okay. It does not ban removal of an ectopic pregnancy, and it does not ban the removal of a miscarried baby. What it does protect life from the moment of conception, essentially banning elective abortions. Now, I have my own opinions where I would even maybe make it more strict. But when I look at it, I'm going, okay, so nothing's really changed. The only difference that people complain and argue about is that now people that are going to get abortions cannot get safe abortions, okay? But when you look at it, all these companies came out saying, hey, I'm going to give $4,000 to anyone that wants to get an abortion. Well, that's because it's easier to pay for an abortion than it is for maternity leave. So the company is just looking out for their own vested interest, which I think is perverted and wrong. That's just my opinion, right? And I feel like, why don't they donate that $4,000 to adoption, to something else? But when you look at these different clinics, right, and you dive deep into them, right, you look at them, if they consult the pregnant mother, right, and advise her not to get an abortion, they don't get any funding. Now, if they suggest to go get the abortion, then they do get money, and then they get paid with it. So it's like, okay, where is this coming from? Who's actually benefiting? And I personally think a lot of this comes down to, okay, do you believe in God? Do you not? All right. If you do believe in God, where do we believe that, you know, we come from? Right. And I mean, you read Jeremiah 1:5, it says, before, you know, you were in the womb, I knew thee. Right. So once we come into the womb, like, we're already there. Now, the other approach that you can view it as is, I just lost my train of thought. I love when that happens. when it comes to...
Well, I think what you're getting at, if I may, is probably like, when do you believe it's a life?
Yes, and that's actually like, what like I wanted
that,
to hit.
That becomes kind
yes.
of... Yeah.
Yeah, so when do you believe, right? I mean, we look at it, you find the tiniest microbe on Mars, and they say, we found life on Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can't say that a child is a child until, even after it's born and it comes out, right, that it's still not a human being, that that's part of the mother. No, if you have, if you kill a pregnant mother, that's a double homicide.
Yeah. What's funny too is that medical technology has actually changed kind of when the life is viable on its own anyway. So back in, you know, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine back in the 50s, it was probably pretty hard to save a child around 26, 28 weeks if it were to be prematurely born. Maybe it was impossible. I don't know. We just know, what we do know is that threshold has lowered. We do know that there are babies that are born at 22 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And they need a lot of support. They need a lot of help. They don't need their mother's body anymore to survive. And so if that's going to be the argument, as like long as it's tethered to the mother, that it's the mother's choice, then that doesn't really hold a lot of weight either, because that number has gone down in terms of like how many weeks it needs to be in the womb in order to be able to survive outside the mother's womb, outside the mother's body, without the mother's support, things like that. So that can't really be the definition either, in my mind. And one thing I did want to say real quick, and this is kind of what my focus has been in this episode specifically, is that I truly believe that most people that are for elective abortion specifically have not really, and this is me hopefully giving them the benefit of the doubt, really looked into the details of how grotesque abortions are.
Yeah.
Because I've read up on them. I've heard doctors that have performed abortions talk about them. And when you hear it, it is, I mean, it's extremely hard to hear. It's you're just sitting there kind of astonished. You're like, oh my gosh. And they talk about how abortions sometimes go that where the baby's still struggling and trying to live, even outside the mother's womb. But since it's an abortion, they can't do anything to help it. And I like even have a hard time talking about this. It's like, if you look into those details, and if you still think that this is something that should be allowed, is kind of mind blowing to me, because you're then essentially saying the rights of the mother usurp the rights of a child. And I don't understand in what world that makes any sense personally.
No. And when you look at the Constitution, that's really what this was coming down to, where it was overturned. They're saying that's not on the Constitution, right? I mean, when you look at, the Bill of Rights, we have certain unalienable rights, right? And you look at, the pursuit of happiness, right? The life of liberty, right? And so we do have that. And it's going, okay, we're defending the unborn, right? It's still a body, right? I mean, how would we look at it if, it was a kangaroo, it's an animal, it's a different mammal that is giving birth or something. Are they, who's going to defend that? Are we going to have activists that go, oh, you're killing these people, or you're killing these animals, this is so wrong. Well, what about a child's life? And to be real, I think that most people are good. I would, when you get into philosophy and you look at Hobbes versus Shaw, I personally believe that people are inherently good, not inherently evil. And what I mean by that is, when you talk with most people, you kind of shut off the news and you get to know your neighbor. I have a best friend that's gay. I have a transgender cousin. I have another transgender cousin who has, anyway, you name it, right? And I love everyone. I connect, I care about getting to know you. Now, do I have my opinions? Yes. And what I think is wrong with society that is really messing us up in today's day and age, there's this quote. It says, just because I disagree with you does not mean that I hate you. We need to relearn that in society. And so it's okay to have differing opinions, but I do think it's fascinating when we dive into it, just about everybody's going to agree. It doesn't matter whether you're a left, right, liberal, conservative, you name it. Most of them are going to go, hey, the only time it's okay is if that the mother's life is at risk and there's cases of rape or something that went on. Most people are going to be pretty close on their opinions. And it's more so the news media that twists everything to try and be so divisive and abrasive to get everyone against each other. Now, I'm a huge proponent that life is life, and I want to preserve life at all costs. I don't care if the child's going to be born deformed, Down syndrome, you name it. Some of my best friends growing up were Down syndrome that taught me so much. And so I don't think there's any excuse, and that's my straight opinion. I know most people don't agree with me, but that is my stance. I will defend and fight for life at all costs, because that's just what I personally believe in. And when you look at the teachings of, you know, the Book of Mormon, the Bible, and the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that's what we stand up for.
Could not have said it better myself, man. I wasn't even thinking along the lines of Down syndrome, because they actually, there's a country in Europe, I can't remember which one, where they're basically, like, the way they talk about it is that they, like, have, I don't know if they use this word, and I hesitate to use a word because it sounds so ugly in this context, but it's like they've eradicated Down syndrome from their country because they basically abort any baby that they know is going to have Down syndrome. And that, like, breaks my heart, because
yeah.
I don't say this to be cheesy, like, when you interact with a Down syndrome person, I don't know how you can come away from that interaction without just feeling like you just feel special. They make you feel special. Like, it's the most raw form of humanity, where it's just like this pure love. I've never had a negative interaction with anybody with Down syndrome. They're beautiful, beautiful humans. And I personally think we could use more of them, because they help us with perspective. So the fact that anybody would think that that's some sort of net positive in this world is mind-blowing, evil, and disgusting to me personally. But anyway.
Right. Well, it was straight up on CNN, I wasn't even too. Along this line. Do you know? I mean, they put that up on CNN. Yeah. They interview this lady.
Anna Navarro.
Right? Yeah. And I had some people message me saying, oh, you know, typical pro-lifers to, like, you know, essentially, you know, pull this out of context or take the thing to the extreme. I'm going, well, I'm letting you know that there are extremes on both sides, and I'm not okay with that, right? And I'm not okay with, like, I'm going to defend, you know, life. Doesn't matter what it is. I have my opinions. I've had really good conversations too. Happy to talk with anybody, right? Face to face. I do not do text. I had someone that sent me this big old text message, right? And she was from Ukraine, okay? And she's like, well, what about this and this and this? And all my response was, I go, look, doesn't matter what we have in this dialogue. It's not going to change my opinion, and it's not going to change your opinion. At the end of the day, I love you. I think you're incredible, and I'm happy to have this conversation in person, but I'm not going to have it over text, because you know what? I do respect and love you as an individual, and that's what's wrong with everything, is everybody becomes this keyboard warrior. They get really big muscles. They think they're so strong typing behind their keyboard that they can say whatever they want. Well, I would rather talk face to face, because people are a little bit more genuine. People are more down to earth, and they're going to be more real with you. And hopefully you can have a substantial conversation and actually back up your supporting views, rather than just, this is my emotion and how I feel about it. Now, granted, I'm a guy, so most people say I shouldn't even have an opinion. But
right.
Yeah. But it does
take... They didn't seem to have a problem on it with all the guys that were for it back in the 70s, but anyway.
Right? I mean, it's a man and a woman that it takes to make a baby, right? And I think there's responsibility on both sides. And this is where it comes down to the degradation of the family, right? That people aren't valuing marriage and the sanctity of procreation. So,
well, could not agree more, man, obviously. So with that, I would love to transition over, and it's kind of a non sequitur, sorry, but do want to talk about what you came over for. I appreciate getting your thoughts on that, though. Seriously, thanks. Yeah, man, and thanks for being candid and open about that. Yeah. Okay, you went to Turkey about 2 months ago.
Yeah, so it's been two months and exactly a week since I did the transplant.
2 months and a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went to get, what do they call them, hair implants or hair transplants?
Yeah, it's a hair transplant is what it's considered. Hair plug sounds like, okay. First time I heard a hair plug, I was like, you did a what, a hair plug? And it sounds funny. It's like you're trying to plug your hair. Yes, they are hair plugs. I'm all about vernacular and lexicon, and I think hair transplant, I mean, it's a procedure, is what they call it. I call it whatever, a surgery, but it is a procedure, I guess, is the technical term.
Gotcha. Well, what I loved is that from the get-go, you just were showing on your Instagram story, like, just everything you were doing. You were like, I'm out in Turkey to get a hair transplant, and you detailed it pretty well. Like, it was pretty cool. It was really cool to see, and I'm sitting here seeing this, and I'm like, dude, I not only do I want to know about this, I'm sure there's plenty of other people that want to hear about this experience that you had. You went with a couple of friends that were all doing the same thing. You seem to be the only one that was extremely open about it, which I think is really cool. But I want to get into this. So for how long, let's just start here. For how long have you wanted to do something like this?
The moment I found out about it. But guess what? I found about it last September.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I found
out. How'd you find out about it?
A buddy posted his online.
Hmm.
So he put it up that he went over to Turkey, and it was like September 21st, 2021. I literally sent in my consultation either that day or the next day. I have pictures like dated September 22nd. I was looking over them before we jumped on this call. And that's literally when I sent in all the pictures to get the consultation from the clinic in Turkey.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay, so I guess I should ask this then. When has this been anything that's been on your mind? When did your hair start thinning? Because I remember, like, you're not bald. I would never say you're bald, right?
No, I still have hair. Yeah. Like, most people are like, I didn't even know you were going bald. Well, that's because we all focus on ourselves more than others, right? And that's just what it is. No one notices, like, anything that, oh, someone else is, you know, they're losing their hair. We notice it ourselves, right? So I really started to lose it. It was about 5+ years ago when I went through a broken engagement. I thought my business was, you know, we're going to have to sell it. My sister's cancer got way worse. And then my mom had a stroke. And so I was just stressed like crazy. You can see pictures from before the engagement, kind of after the engagement. And I wish that girl the best. I have nothing, just truly wish her the best, right? This is not about her. It was an unhealthy relationship, and I lost a lot of hair. And I continued to for a bit. And then once I understood, okay, cool. I look at my family. My oldest brother, who's like 11 years older than me, he's still got amazing hair. Right. So it's not like a genetic thing per se. I mean, we look at my mom's dad, he had hair for, you know, a long time until he passed away. And so, like, it's not a genetic thing per se. I just started to thin out super bad. All of my other brothers have hair decently. I'm the youngest, and I was starting to lose my hair like mad.
Yeah. Okay. So ever since then, you're like, at some point, I'm going to try and do something to get this back. I don't know when or where or how, but
I was just going to shave it. My plan was to shave it and just go bald. I think I look good bald, and I actually got hit up.
You got a good head shape. I could see that.
Right? I was like, okay, yeah. I like being bald, and I was just going to embrace it. There are some different girls I date, and they're like, well, just keep the hair for a bit before you shave it. I was down to shave it, honestly, a few years ago. And I had some girls that told me not to. So I would have.
That's the one. They just have that power, don't they?
They did. And I was like, okay, cool. Do. I'll keep it. But I was also kind of nervous to shave my head completely bald. I didn't know what I was going to look like. And I was like, if I shave it all the way, then I'm pretty much there. So for me.
Have you never done that?
As when I was a little kid. But like when I had full head of hair. But when you shave it and you don't have a ton of hair, it grows back really funny looking. Like, that's what it's doing right now as it's growing back. It looks, I'm in what's considered the ugly duckling stage right now. Okay. So,
well, you look fantastic. If you're asking me, you look freaking great.
Thanks, man. I mean, I am wearing a hat too, but you know, I mean, you can see it, you know, the hair's coming in, but it's going to take a little bit
coming in. Yeah.
So at months, three, and four is when it really starts to thicken up. And it's from there up until about 12 months. And then you see the real results, like 12 to 18 months is what they put. I think you'll see most of it come about 6 months. And so I'm excited. I mean, I'm already seeing, you know, different results where it is coming in thicker. So, I mean, tell me what you want to know. I mean, I am very open about the procedure. Ask me, I mean, what do you want to know about the clinic, the cost?
I mean, not, honestly, I would like probably cover that just so if anybody's interested that's listening to this, they'll know about it. But I didn't do this. Not, I mean, I think people that know me obviously know that my hair is not really thinning too much. It's definitely gotten thinner, I guess, mm-hmm. but I think it'd be hard for anybody else to tell. I'm still doing.
You
still,
got luscious locks, man. Luscious locks. You got a good set of hair, man.
Yeah, that's why I brought you on. I just wanted to have you shower me with compliments the whole time. No, I was very curious about kind of the procedure itself, but I'm also really curious about the aspect of like how that's affected kind of your outlook, so to speak. You're one of the most positive people I know, by the way. So thanks. I can't imagine it's anything that you were like super pessimistic about or being like, gosh, man, I just, if only I had thicker, longer hair, blah, blah, blah. But I'm wondering if it did affect kind of the way you carried yourself in social situations, dating wise or anything else, where you're just like, you know, it would be kind of nice to not have this be a thing that I have to worry about or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I know it's kind of an ambiguous question, but I'm just curious, like, did it affect your emotional well-being or your mental health in any way or anything like that?
No, I think it was my emotional health that actually caused me to lose the hair because I was in such a rough spot. I mean, that's really why I lost my hair. Now, as far as the after facts of everything, didn't bother me too much. Where it did suck was going boating. I'd go boating. I had a massive comb over. You couldn't tell as much, but when it would get wet, right, it would look a lot thinner. Mm-hmm. So I started to just always wear a hat when I'd go. I remember I was out in Hawaii like 5 years ago and I went surfing and I come back and the next day I realized I have a sunburn on my head and it hurt. And then a few days later it started to peel and I go, oh my gosh, I am going bald. Right. That's when it finally hit me. Like I'd never had a sunburn on the top of my head. So I was getting to the point where I was fine, but I next was about to shave it, you know, and that's where it's like, okay, cool. I'd be okay. But absolutely. I mean, it is kind of frustrating. You see it starting to recede and it was kind of embarrassing to be in certain pictures where I'm like, oh, that's not a very good angle. Right. And I don't actually care so much, but I'm like, oh, that made me look majorly bald just because the angle and the way that like the light from the back hit it. I was like, oh, that does not look good. And I remember watching The Office, okay? You watch Michael Scott in season one. He is bald.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Okay, he is bald. Yeah, and then for sure. Magically, mm-hmm. he has hair. And so
And thin. Like, his hair is slicked back, and it's super thin. Like, you can tell. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I remember watching that, like when it was going. I remember seeing season one and then seeing season two be like, dang, like he's lost weight, he did his hair different, and that's as far as I went, but like he legitimately got implants or plugs or whatever you want to call it, but like, yeah, he definitely worked that over, and yeah, it's a stark difference, you're not wrong.
So I knew it was possible, right? I definitely knew it was possible, so I looked at some stuff, but the costs were astronomical. It's like 30,000-40,000, and I'm like, okay, I can afford that, but I was like, I don't care that much about my hair to spend 25-30 grand or whatever. I was like, I'll just shave it bald. Like, I feel pretty confident in who I am. And then later on, I found out, oh, cool, there are cheaper options. You can do it for a better cost, right? And so once I saw what the cost was in Turkey, I'm like, oh, I'd be dumb not to go do it because it was so cheap in comparison, and I got a free trip out of it, right? So that's really when I started to look at it. I saw my buddy Jake put everything up. I saw kind of the results that he was getting. And I go, you know, if I'm going to go over to Turkey and do this, I'm going to do it at a clinic that I feel like I can trust, right? So the cost breakdown, you have a number of different procedures that you can look at. So what most people have done, it's called an FUT, okay? And the FUT is where they do the strip. Have you ever heard of the FUT before?
No, never.
Okay, so it's a follicular unit transplantation, okay? And what that is, it's the same thing as a hair transplant, but what they do is they do the strip or two strips behind the head. It's a straight strip. That's where you'll see the scars on the back of people's heads. And a lot of people are embarrassed by that. I remember when I heard about that, I was like, oh, I wouldn't actually care. Who cares if there's a scar, right? But like, but if you ever shave, it looks funny. I was like, who cares? I have quite a few friends that have done that. One of them just wore like a Euro faux hawk, like all the way back, you know, to cover it. And then,
yeah, I've seen those. Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was pretty popular for a while. And then they came out with FUE, which is the follicular or follicular unit extraction. And that's where they go in and they'll do like, they try and do individual as much as they can. And that's what I was planning on doing.
Like in random spots on the back of your head?
Yeah, random spots throughout the whole head. So that way it's not like a straight strip and it just, it's an overall, like you pull it through, like it's an overall thinning of the thickness to put the thickness where your hair is thin. If I explain that properly. And then that's what I was expecting to do. I put in my consultation. I took pictures front, back, side, side, you know, you name it. Then they come back and say, okay, this is what we recommend. For me, they had originally recommended like 3,000 grafts. And they said, hey, we'll do FUE. Well, once I got in there, they go, oh, just kidding. We'll do 4,600 grafts. And you need to do the DHI because you have hair. FUE is for people that don't have any hair up there. The DHI is if you still have hair up there. And DHI is direct hair implant. And the DHI is a cleaner one. What that means is it's going to go in and it's going to basically cut around the entire casing of the follicle to get the entire graft, and then they pull it out. They use something called a Choi pen, okay? And so they'll go through and pull everything out. So this is what they did, okay? So day one, I get there, I meet with the Dr. Serkan, all right? Igon, or however to say his name. I still can't even say it properly. This Turkish guy. And he comes in, he starts, you know, going through, he assesses my scalp, goes, okay, cool, we need to do 2,400 grafts in the frontal lobe. We need to do 800 here in this middle section, and then 1,400 around, like, the crown, over the crown of the head, right? I'm like, okay, cool. So 4,600 altogether. And I was stoked. I wanted to do as much as I possibly could because I know in the U.S., now I've had tons of people reach out to me. So it's kind of funny. I know, like, all this different community of all these people that have had, like, their hair transplants done. And I'm not going to say any of their names just out of respect to anyone and the guys that I went over with. I'm open. That's my story to tell. Their story is their story to tell.
I am curious, though, real quick, actually, on that note, when you were, like, going to Turkey and you're like, hey, did you just, like, contact other, like, bald friends that you knew? And you're like, hey, let's go get hair transplants in Turkey. And they were like, done.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had more people that wanted to go with me. They just couldn't make it work with the dates.
I feel so discriminated against, dude. I never got an invite to Turkey.
I know I should
all because I have hair. That's what it is. Freak, man. Gosh.
Yeah. I did want to have at least one person go with me. You get like a plus one in like the hotel and like stay there. It's like free transportation. But also
Turkey, dude.
Right.
Let's not ignore the political like tension that's going on in Turkey. Like they basically had a pseudo dictator for years now. Erdogan is no joke. But anyway.
Yes, which
not it's not a place I would definitely want to go to alone either. I'll be honest, for any reason.
Yeah, well, I just like to travel with someone. I've traveled by myself, and it's not as enjoyable. And so I was like, cool, let me see who I can get to go over with me, right? And so this is really kind of how it came down. I mean, when I decided to go, I had a business partner that was going to go with me. Okay, and so that's really where everything kind of stemmed from. I messaged him. I'm like, hey, let's go do it. But he didn't have his passport. And so I ended up waiting for him. And then my sister had passed away, which kept on pushing things back farther and farther, right? Like I wasn't going to go over there when I'm trying to like figure out a funeral, right? So then I push it back.
Right.
He still doesn't have his passport because I wanted to go as soon as possible. Literally, as soon as I found out, I wanted to go the next month. I'm like, why wait, right? I want to get in as soon as possible. And so then basically what happened is, that guy was out. I'm like, dude, I'm done waiting. So I called up one of my friends and I go, I am booking my flight right now. Are you in or not? And he's like, yes, I'm in. So I bought the flights for both of us, right? And then a week later, and keep in mind, so because of the political tension that had been going on in Ukraine, I mean, you have Turkey, which is right underneath the Black Sea. Turkey is right at the point of Europe and Asia and Africa, pretty close, right? Like, that is Constantinople, right? And so they had a lot of people pulling out, not going and doing the transplants because people were nervous to fly over to Turkey. So I'd messaged before and they told me I was 2-3 months out. Well, this time I messaged to see how quick I could get in. She goes, "We can get you in 2 weeks," which now I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case anymore. So I bought my flight. And I go, "Cool, I'll be there 2 weeks," right? Sent her all of my stuff. Then I talked with another buddy who he was balding. And I was like, "Hey, man, I'm going to Turkey. Do you want to do a hair transplant?" And he's like, "Actually, I do." And I found out that he had done 2 previous hair transplants and that they had worked incredibly well. I was like, "Okay, cool." So he wanted to go and do a 3rd one. I was like, "Okay, that's cool." So we end up getting him scheduled because we were already on the docket to go over there. And so this is what's so cool. They do 12 to 15 like hair procedures a day in the clinic. 12 to 15 a day.
Wow.
And when we get there day one, they go over the stuff, the, you know, additional in-person consultation, get you prepped. And then when they took us there, I went in, they picked me up like at 6:30 in the morning. Okay. Well, I show up there. I had my whole hair procedure for about 8.5 hours from the time I got there and the time I got out and left was about 8.5 hours. I had 4,600 grafts, so they had to poke me about 10,000 times. Okay. They're taking out 4,600.
Do you feel like every poke, like, is this like a painful thing?
So what they do is they do local anesthesia. So they're going to numb you. You know when you go to the dentist and you it's kind of the same concept.
Same thing.
And so every now and then I'd feel something. I'm like, "Hey, am I supposed to feel that poke?" And they're like, "Oh, nope." And then they'd, you know, re-inject me with local anesthesia. Yeah. So what they end up doing, they took 1,100 grafts from my beard and neck. And then about 3,500 from the side of my head back and the other side of my head, and then put it all in on the top.
So these places, they're taking it from places where hair is never going to grow back, right? Like they, like when they take it from there, like that, now that fault, like that is a dead spot. And like, if it's from your beard, you're never going to grow a hair follicle there again.
Yeah.
Now, but granted, it's one follicle. So you, like, it's unnoticeable, right? From random spots.
But. So difference, technically, and I was wrong, it's a graft that they pull out, and some of the grafts have 4 follicles. So they gave me the sheet when they went through, and I had like 1,100 grafts that had 4 hair follicles inside of it. So I'll technically have more than 4,600 follicles, right, that they did, but it's 4,600 grafts, because you can have one graft that has 3 hairs, right, that has 3 follicles within in the graft. So it's kind of cool learning that. I was like, okay, makes sense, right? But I don't care. My neck's, I shave my neck, and it's like, take whatever hair there. I don't want it. Now,
I was going to say, like, can you choose the place they take it from? Because for me, I'd be like, take it from my back. I don't want any back hair.
Yeah, but some of that hair is going to be super thin and weak.
Yes, that's actually true. My back hair is just a joke, dude. I hate that it exists.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't actually. Gotta
freaking lose me about that.
But yeah, I mean, take whatever you want, right? And so that was kind of cool to see, right? And so supposedly sometimes the hair will grow back. My understanding is it does not. Okay. I read somewhere like it will. I don't think it does. Don't plan on it. If you get it, whatever they take out, it's not coming back, right? What's cool though, when you look at the side of my head, and I've gone and gotten a haircut twice since being back, just to trim up the sides. I mean, you can't tell, like, if I were to grow it out, you'd have no idea that they took anything from the side of my head.
No, none whatsoever. Yeah, like, that looks like a totally normal haircut to me. Yeah.
You can't tell. And that's what's cool about the DHI. Now, the DHI, it preserves the graft a lot more. And then it was so cool. So they have, you go in, I tried video recording everything I possibly could. And then they made me put my phone away to go into the operating room, right? I get in there. And there's literally 8 to 10 people that are doing it. I had 3 people at one time poking in my head at the same time, pulling hairs out of the side of my head. It was nuts. Yeah,
and you're awake the whole time.
You're awake. I tried to go into like a flow meditative state of just like, I'm there, but I'm not. And I tried to sleep as much as I could. And so
what was cool, were you ever able to fall asleep?
I would go in and out. I mean, you are drugged up on anesthesia. That's still local anesthesia. They don't like knock you out for it. So, I mean, it didn't feel good, but it wasn't like unbearable. Like it wasn't that bad, I don't think. But I do have a friend that did it, and it was like the worst pain in his life. Where it was like, dude,
freak.
Right? Where he was just like, I've never had worse pain. I've had a few surgeries. I feel like I have a decent high pain tolerance. So I was fine with it. It felt like this. So when they're putting it back in, right? So they take everything out, then they line everything up on this table. They sort out the follicles. Like they have 10 people working on it, right? So first they had me lay on my back, I think. And then they did my beard, or maybe it was I don't know. I was so in and out of it. I don't remember if they did my beard or the side of my head first. But at the end, they're putting everything in. And it felt like, remember when you'd be, you know, when you take a rubber band and you flick it on someone, you like hold it between your two fingers and then you like bring it out. That's what it felt like when they're putting the follicle back into my hair. Okay. On the top.
And they had to do that 4,600 times.
Yeah. But it didn't hurt at all. That's just what it felt like. It was like, it's completely numb. And it felt like kind of.
What are you talking about, dude? Those rubber bands do hurt, though.
I know, but you're numb. So like in middle school. But it was like a soft one. I don't know how to describe it. It did not hurt. And so that literally the Choi pen, they're like pushing it. And so what I didn't know what they were doing after I looked at the pen and I saw that they're actually like pushing it to implant it. But I thought they were doing like trying to snap it in or something. So it is kind of cool that way. So yeah, I'm trying to think what other like fun details you want to know. So, okay. So after that, okay. So you go in and you do it. Then you get out, you get some food, make sure you're not like completely like going to pass out. I looked in the mirror and I was just like, what the hell did I just do? Like, what did I just do? Because my whole head is just bright red as can be. And I have this white, looks like a white turban almost all the way around my head.
Didn't you take a picture of this?
Yeah. I and I'll send them all to you.
Didn't you share this? Yeah. I want these.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can see right here where I'm just standing there or
laying
down.
Yeah.
There.
I remember that picture.
I look like Data from Star Trek.
You look like like Bozo when he's like 87 years old.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Bozo the clown, dude. Like he was the one that. Yeah, I remember that picture
there's
too.
There's the top of my head. So yeah, most of them. Stuff.
That hairline, by the way, looks amazing. No joke, it really does.
Oh yeah,
so that's exciting.
It was unreal. I mean, you can look here and you can put this one up too. So this is right after you can see. So what they do is you go in the next day, they take off the bandages and they clean it. Mm-hmm. And then they put this black sweatband around your head. Now the black sweatband, the purpose in that is to help prevent all the swelling. And so I ended up looking like Megamind, where everything above the sweatband just started to get fat. But if not, it would go down into your eyes and then it just like looks funky everywhere.
Then you
right?
start to look like Sloth from Goonies.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so then they give you this bucket hat and we just went and traveled and had so much fun. Like honestly, 10 out of 10 on the trip. When I look at it and I rate it based off of the quality of the medical clinic, top notch. They were so professional in how they handled everything, what they did, made sure we were taken care of, explained everything before, after, exactly what needs to be done. And there's a lot of additional care the next 10 days that you've got to be very, very careful about for the next 10 days. And then after that, it gets a little bit better. Really, the money mark is at 2 months. So where I'm at, I don't have to worry. I can technically be in the sun now. I don't have to cover my head. I still wear a hat just because it looks funky and might as well, you know, continue to protect the investment. So what I did want to show you, so what's kind of cool here is to see this picture is 2 weeks after.
Yeah, that looks great, man.
Yeah, it looks incredible, right? So 2 weeks after.
That's a full head of hair.
No, it's incredible. And then after that, you start to shed. is what it's called. Mm. You shed like a dog and you lose all the hair. So my hair is starting to come back right now, but it's supposed to do that. Okay. Let's see it now. So it's a healthy process. So right now, you can see how pink it is up here. It's super pink up here and super pink up here. But I didn't have a hairline up there at all. And so that's going to start to come in. So right in here and here, I'm going to have 2,400 grafts. And then they put in another, 800 here and then 1,400 all in the back. So it's only going to get thicker and thicker, which makes me super pumped, especially when you look at that picture and you can pop it up or whatever, show it to people. That's 2 weeks after. That's incredible. Two weeks after the hair transplant, which just blows my mind. And I'll start to, as it starts to get a little bit thicker and thicker, I have all these progress pictures that I'm going to put up, and I've kind of waited because I know you're going to have the naysayers like, oh, it didn't even work. So I'm going to put up all the ugly pictures and I'll have the bomb picture as well associated with it, because most people want me to be the guinea pig. Like, oh, dude, once I see the final result, then I'll go over. That's fine. And you can wait to see the final result. I'm all about trusting the process, right? I've already seen the other results of people, and I'm happy to just trust the process and kind of do what they say.
Do you get a little kickback, dude? Like, sending all these people to Turkey to get hair transplants? Like, is this clinic in Turkey just going to be like, hey, Dan, thanks. This is like a multi-level marketing type thing where they're going to start giving you $1,000 per.
I should have. I didn't realize how much traction I was going to get. So they have this social media package you can do, and I did not elect for it, and I should have. But basically, you do a social media package, they'll pay for everything. You have to put up like YouTube videos. You have to do like tons of updates and post things all over the place. More than what I've even done, right? And for doing that, they'll pay for your whole thing, right? Now, after this, anyone that goes there that is my referral, I get $200 for.
Oh, you really do? I was actually joking. I think you should, though. Why not?
Yeah. Someone goes, they put my referral, but it's only if I get five people. If I get four people, I get nothing. If I get five people to go, they'll comp me like $1,000. To be real, it's not really... I mean, there's not much that they're comping you. So for me, I was like, cool, if people want to go, sweet. If you do go, throw my name. I'd love a kickback. But ultimately, go wherever the heck you want. Do your own research. Go to a clinic that you feel good with. And that's really what I'm about. I mean, you'd asked me in the past, right? I remember you'd asked me something like, why are you so vocal about this? Or what had you asked me? I'm trying to remember. You're like, hey.
No, I wasn't asking in this. If I remember right, I remember being like, dude, I thought that was really cool that you were super open about it.
Yeah, what like, I meant is like, why? Hey, this is what I'm doing. Which you're like, why? Are you trying to like
stigmatize it? It is. Yeah, exactly. Was there a purpose? I guess, was there a purpose behind it is ultimately what I mean. You know, like, were you trying to destigmatize like, whatever it is, like hair thinning, baldness, or whatever, and just being like, hey, like this is where like it's completely foreign to me. I don't know what it's like to have the hair thinning, to be going bald, like, and obviously, I don't even know why women like hair. I don't understand. I don't know if there's like something at the subconscious level that they feel or whatever, but so I really just don't know what it's like. And so obviously, you look at Seinfeld and George Costanza and his whole like, I'm a bald man, like his like self-lamentations of that sort. What was there a goal or a purpose behind it? So, and maybe not. Maybe you're just being like to be open about your life, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever.
Oh, you're totally good. And I never took it in a bad way. I was like, oh yeah, I mean.
I know you wouldn't have, yeah.
To be real, most people were so stoked. I had literally over 100 people message me just wanting more details, wanting to know more, and about 50 people that were like, hey, I want to go and do this. Like, I didn't even know this was an option. This is so cool. And so for me, the reason I did it
all right, who are their names right now? What are their Instagram handles? Tell us all of them.
Right? I got like the little blacklist, for everyone.
Exactly, dude.
But for
name
me,
names.
For me, it's to empower others, right? And I was like, you know what, this is cool. And that comes back to my personal why in life. And a part of my personal why is to empower others through authenticity. And so I feel like, how can I go and do this and not be authentic about it? And I want to empower someone else that's in a similar position that's like, hey, I have hair, but I wouldn't mind having a little bit more. You know, like, I'd totally take more hair. If I could have hair like you, heck yeah, like, why not, you know? And I've heard other friends tease about it where they're like, you know, a hair transplant for men is like a breast augmentation for women. It's like, I mean, there might be some truth there.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad, that's not a bad equivalence. I mean, I would never chastise either. Yeah. Like, that's my point. It's like, I'm never going to look at a woman and be like, why would you do that? Like, I don't know the freaking, what goes into that. Like, girls that just have never really felt like as much of a woman for whatever reason.
And sometimes it's medical too. You have some people and where there's a medical thing. Absolutely. Like, you have no idea. And so I just support, you know, if I want to empower a girl or a woman to be her best self, right? And I want to empower men to be their best self. I mean, that's what we're about. It's empowering others around us. And that really stems back to my personal why. So I go, okay, well, if I'm going to go do this, I'm going to be very open about it. Because just like me, I did not know that that was even an option. I didn't know I could go to Turkey and do that, nor for the cost. I mean, the cost was insanely cheap. So I'm going, I want to empower anyone else.
How much was it?
So the breakdown on the exact cost, it was $2,500 for the entire procedure. Okay. And that includes the hotel, the transportation, everything that they do, the whole nine yards. Okay. Then I paid an additional $600 for the DHI. And then I paid an extra $300 to stay an extra 4 or 5 days in Turkey to travel around. And then my flight was $665 round trip. Now, that's you add crazy. That all up, wow. It's roughly $4,000. Now, in general, flights are about $1,200 over there. When I got mine, just the flights were super low. And I was like, done, I'm going to buy it. I'm paying more to fly down to Hawaii or, you know, a last minute trip, you know, 2 weeks away to California or somewhere. I mean, $600 to round trip to Turkey. Like, and I get.
That's insane.
And I get new hair. Who's not all about getting some new hair and a fun trip? Get to go see the Hagia Sophia, the Blue Mosque, went out to Cappadocia, see the huge hot air balloon festival, go to the underground city, go to the Valley of Love. You go to the Ikassar Castle. You go to these, I don't know. There's just so much to do there. Istanbul has tons to see and do. You have the people on the streets that do you see the thing I put up of the ice cream guy?
It doesn't sound familiar.
So those are the people, it's in Turkey, where they basically harass you. So you try and you grab the ice cream cone and they pull it out of your hand and they twist it around and then they give you another one. You try and grab it. I'll have to send it to you, the video, but they're fun. They're fun people. I really loved, I mean, it's a fun culture and you get to explore. So for me, did you ever watch the Netflix documentary on Mehmed, all about Constantinople, like the siege and how they took it over? Super cool. Mm-mm. So I'm a total nerd at heart. I love learning about history and random things just because I think it's fascinating. Like, we can learn so much from our predecessors, right? And so the whole thing talks about Mehmed and how he conquered and took over Constantinople, and it had never been done before. It was known as a city that could not be taken over. So it's kind of cool then to go see it all in person after I'd done all this study up about the country. And I'd been dying to go to Turkey ever since I think I was 9 years old. I'd wanted to go to Turkey.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Dude, I like that. That's a wild experience, man. And good for you. And I love how you refer to that. You're saying that, like, that's your why. And it's absolutely relatable for me because why else am I starting a podcast? You know, I mean, I say starting, I've been doing this for like a year and a half now, but like, why did I start a podcast? Well, it was because it's kind of like, hey, I want to show my authentic self. I want to articulate things in certain ways that may resonate with people. And I may want to give other people courage or whatever they're looking for to also kind of stand up, state their beliefs, or whatever else, to just be themselves and to not be scared of what they feel might be the majority that's out there, that there are other voices that can represent their own beliefs as well. You know, things like that. And I think that's, in a nutshell, kind of what you're doing as well to some degree with things like this. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, my overall why, that's like the second portion. My full why in life, it's one, to discover truth, because truth sets you free, which has so much mm-hmm. to it. And then the second part is to, you know, live life with intention through authenticity and empower others to do the same. And so for me, everything that I do now, I mean, you listened to the other podcasts I had done. And when I talk with people, if I'm doing something and it does not support my why, I don't do it. And it kind of gives me kind of a course, a little course, you know, corrector. If I'm doing something and it doesn't align with my why statement, then it's a complete waste of time. But if I have something, I go, no, that definitely aligns with my why. Whether I'm nervous or, you know, slightly fearful to go do it, well, now I need to go do it, because that's going to empower others, right? And that's also going to help me to be true and authentic to myself.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I dig that. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but as I do kind of close up here, because I've always liked talking with you, and you've kind of talked about this, but like we addressed kind of things you've been through and things like that. And I just wanted to, since this is called Latter Day Takes, I do like to kind of have a spin on it when I can that's church related, and you're not quiet about that, and I love that. But how has that kind of affected this same philosophy that you've embraced? Like, just if it doesn't fit your why, you don't do it. But like, how does that fit into the gospel and how you carry yourself and things like that?
Okay, so my overall why. So you have Simon Sinek, and you're familiar with Simon Sinek? Yeah. He has the book Start With Why. So I do a lot of coaching. I help other business owners. I'll work with, I have guys that I start businesses with, and then I'll just have friends that come over and they're like, hey, help me out. And so I do something where I dive into their whys, right? I dive in, I kind of see what's going on in their life, and I'll have them watch a 7-minute segment all about Simon Sinek's Start With Why, right? And so for me, most people ask what you do or how you did something that was hard, but rarely do people ask you why you did it. And I think that when you break it down, why is a truth, okay? And or doctrine. If you look at it in the gospel approach, why is doctrine? How is going to be the application? And what is going to be principle? So it comes down to doctrine, principles, and applications, which is the same as why, hows, and whats. And that's kind of how I looked at it with mine, where truth is light, truth is intelligence, and even God has a why, right? Everything that we do in the church supports the mission of the church, but that mission of the church also supports God's why. You pull up Moses 139, Scripture Mastery, what's it say? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Oh, shoot. Is this, hold on. Gosh, it's, for isn't this, it kind of akin to, it's, what's that?
No, it's for this is my work and my glory.
So I was thinking it was kind of like, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, but that's obviously John 3:16.
Yeah.
But I was thinking it was akin to that, and it kind of is, yeah, because it's the work of my glory. This is my
so
work.
So that's the how. Yeah. So that's the how, which is cool. You look at John 3:16, that's the how.
Yeah.
All right, that's how this was accomplished, which is through the Savior, right? That's the purpose of the atonement, right? Now, why though, right? The why, for this is my work and my glory, to bring to pass the immortality
and eternal life.
So that is the why, right? Everything supports that why. I mean, God even has a why. God has straight told us his why. Okay. And that's why this stuff I think is so fascinating, because I dive into it and going, okay, God's got his why. I have my why, and it will continue to change. My why used to be my future family, right? I did all these different businesses, trying to get things going for my future family. Well, it only got me so far. I'm still not married. I don't have a future family. I mean, I have a future family. I just don't have
them. Oh, you do, yeah.
I just don't have them yet, right?
As long as you want one. Right.
And so I had to dive in deeper and go, what is my actual why? And I've continued to refine it, even the, you know, the vernacular, right? Where it used to be encourage. And I was like, no, I don't want to encourage others. I want to empower others. Encourage is like exhortation and like to, no, empower means, hey, I'm giving you the power. You can also do this, rather than trying to like persuade someone to do something. And so that's really how it lines up with the gospel. I mean, I go, okay, I'm searching for truth. And for me, I have so much more about truth, right? It's not just, you know, truth doctrine, but I, as I read the scriptures, I go, okay, what are true eternals or true eternal principles or, sorry, I can't even talk, true eternal statements, right? Truth statements or eternal, you know, doctrinal principles that are there that then I can apply in every aspect of my life. And it's so cool because I have found ways to apply it to business, to relationships, and that's relationships in every aspect, right? To working out, to the gym, to you look at diet and exercise, you look at the way that we view money, right? I mean, the scriptures give you a clear, you know, path and outline of how to go and make money, what you need to do if you want to. It gives it to you. You want to have a healthy relationship with your spouse, with your parents, with your kids, with your siblings. Like, the scriptures have the ultimate guide. And I love reading. You know, I mean, we talk and
absolutely.
I love reading books. And for me, I read a book and I find scriptures that support the truths that are talked about in those books.
Now, that's really cool. Actually, you can almost vet the veracity of these books that we read through the scriptures. Like, actually, yeah, I think you're spot on that. So that brings me to my next and last question. What are three books that have changed your life recently? I mean, I'm sure you could come up with way more than three, but I'm just curious, kind of like what's on your mind.
Cool. I mean, obviously the Book of Mormon, but if we take the Book of Mormon out.
I will never not say the Book of Mormon, right? For the record.
I'm always going to say the Book of Mormon, right? But if we take the Book of Mormon out, the three books that I recommend that I think everyone should read, right? Especially if you, you know, whatever, doesn't matter what. The first one is The Four Agreements, okay? The Four Agreements resets the way that you view the dogmas and stigmas of society, okay? You essentially unleash yourself from the shackles that society has put on you, okay? And it's cool because at the intro of it, it talks about the Toltec. And if you do a comparison with D&C 93, it's almost spot on. The exact same thing. It talks all about light and truth. Okay. So the Four Agreements is the first one that helps to kind of break free. The next one I love is Untethered Soul. And the reason I love Untethered Soul, you have a lot of books on awareness and consciousness, right? And being awakened. And what's so cool about this book is at the end, it talks about the atonement. And it talks about the intercessory prayer, talks about John 17. And I love that because for me, I'm going, yes, that's really what it's about, is the at-one-ment, right? We want to have that awakeness, right? That awareness, that full consciousness. And the whole book talks about your ego and your subconscious, right? And helps you to break through and understand kind of how we work, right? Now, the third book, it's up for debate. I would say as of right now, I would recommend Whole Again. And the reason I'd recommend Whole Again is because a lot of people have been in an unhealthy relationship, or they've been in lots of healthy relationships. But what's so cool about this book is it calls everyone out on their own crap. Okay. And people get triggered as they read through it. And that's great. Right. I had to do a lot of introspection as I read through it, and it helped me heal quite a bit, as long as it was done with the atonement of Jesus Christ. I mean, I made sure to, you know, for me, it doesn't matter what it is.
Major caveat, by the way. Right? Yeah.
You have to incorporate the savior. I mean, I think that that's the biggest mistake with New Age spiritualism, or you look at any, you know, new hip philosophy, they have a lot of truths, and that's why they have a lot of followers, but they deny the Christ. They deny the savior, and I mean, the savior is the way, the truth, and the life. You know, no man cometh unto the Father but through the savior. And so I think that these books are incredible as long as we keep in remembrance the savior. So those are my three top books that I always recommend to people that have nothing to do with business, have nothing to do with anything else. It's a personal introspection. And then you can dive in a little bit more and go, okay, think for yourself. Don't do something just because society says to do it, right? I mean, when you look at the third of the hosts of heaven left, well, they were just being sheep, right? They just left. They followed. How many people were fence sitters? And so I think it's our duty to empower others to think for themselves. I mean, nowhere in the scriptures, nowhere in the doctrine of the church does it say, do not think for yourself. In fact, it says, study, DNC 88:118, study from the best books, right? And then it talks about seek counsel by study and by faith, right? And so we're encouraged to study and learn about other religions, right? Learn as much as we can. And as I study and learn about other religions more and more, it strengthens my own belief and faith in Jesus Christ.
Man, I love that. I love that, man. I knew I wouldn't regret asking you that question. I wrote down those book titles, by the way. I'd heard of all of them, but hadn't really gotten a synopsis. Four Agreements, I think, is one maybe I've heard about the most. I'm looking forward to checking those out, dude. Thank you for throwing those my way.
Yeah, of course.
With that, Dan, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks for being candid. I knew I was going to get a candid interview from you. You don't know any other way, and I love that. I respect it. I try to be the same way. So,
thanks, man.
Well, brother, keep me posted on. I want to see that growth come in, man. I'm excited.
Okay, I'll be throwing updates and posts here in the next month to 2 months. That's when it starts to thicken up. So,
love it. One more thing I wanted to say real quick. I don't know if I shared this with you. In fact, I don't know how much detail I want to share on the podcast necessarily, but so what my listeners don't know is that I like to do kind of like a charity poker night thing. Where I loved playing Texas Hold'em growing up, but I'm not much of a gambler. I don't really think that's necessarily a good thing for me necessarily. And so I really don't gamble. But what I have done is I've done charity poker, Texas Hold'em. Had a bunch of friends come over last December, and I think we threw down like $25 or something like that, and people could buy in as much as they want. And the winner would get to choose where the money went. Well, Dan here won. He's a baller. He's quite the Hold'em poker player. And you had mentioned your sister passing away and kind of you wanted to honor her legacy. And so we ended up kind of splitting up some of the money so you could do some of that. But I felt like, I don't know, man, dare I say your sister kind of had a hand in this whole thing anyway, because you were asking me for suggestions. And my brother, so we in my family, we just buy one sibling a gift and we just kind of make rotations every year. And so I had my brother that's just older than me, and he said, hey, why don't you go to your ward and just donate my gift to charity? Find some, like, talk to your bishop and find somebody that might be in need, some families. And you were like, that sounds great. I was like, my brother's just doing that. Do you just want to do something like that? And you're like, that sounds great. And so I did that. I talked to my bishop, and we were able, I mean, we didn't raise like a ton of money. It was just like a few hundred here and there, I think, ultimately.
It was like 750. And then, I think it was 750.
Yeah, and we ended up, and we split it out, and so I can't remember exactly how much I ended up donating. I think you gave me maybe as much as even like 400 almost or something like that. And then that was on top of that what I was going to give for my brother, and specifically they were able to help a single mom of like six in the ward, and then another family whose father had recently, like, lost his job, and they were struggling in ways that they was unfamiliar because they we're used to having Christmas a certain way, not necessarily in gifts, but just kind of certain traditions. What was really cool, man, was that I didn't hear any of the outcome, kind of how that all played out, but one of the girls in the ward had shared, she gave a talk, and she had mentioned how hard Christmas was on their family. But what was so nice was that I knew that some of the money that you had donated for this had gone to this family. And her talk's focus was how they were able to still kind of, you know, maintain some of those Christmas traditions. She didn't mention specifically receiving, I don't even know if they knew, like it might have just been their parents that knew. But I just took a lot of comfort in that, thinking like, not only obviously you played a huge role in that, but like me going to my bishop and just kind of thinking, wow, like what a blessing to see. You never really ask for these things, like to see the results of kind of some of the actions that you do. But when sometimes you get lucky where God kind of pulls the curtain back and he says, this is what you've done. And I thought that was really cool. I never shared that with you until now.
No,
and it's just like a testament to, yeah, dude, of course, I should have shared that with you right away. But it was a testament to me. Like, it made me a little bit emotional where I'm thinking, wow, like we helped make a difference. Not a huge deal, right? Not a huge deal, but it's something. And like, that's what it's all about, right? And hopefully, like, as we get older, we just try and make more and more differences like that moving forward in our lives, right? So.
No, I love it. And it's seeing how big of an impact we can continue to have, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
No, thanks for sharing that.
All right, man. Well, of course, dude. Thank you. And we'll stay in touch, obviously, Dan. I'd love to bring you back at some point because you're just easy and fun to talk to. So
thanks, man. I appreciate being here.
Let's just plan on it. I think. Of course, brother. All right, man. Well, have a good one, and I'll catch you later.
All right. See you, man. Okay, bye.
See you. Okay. Hope you all enjoyed Dan Osler coming on the podcast, giving great detail to his hair transplant procedure. Loved his openness, loved his candor. Dan's a great guy. He's always been really easy to talk to. One of those that I met from day one that I'm just like, this guy's a homie. Easy to talk to, great conversationalist, love it. So I knew it would be fun to have him on the pod. One thing I wanted to share kind of just as my kind of gospel thought this week was something that I actually put out there on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, right? Instagram and Facebook stories are the same, so they showed up on both. It was a scripture. I was just reading normal scripture study. I believe it was Monday morning. And it was Helaman 7. And I've heard, now I need to track down this quote. I think, so I went to my mom. My mom actually knew who it was. It was Elder, so I thought it was Elder or President Faust. That was what someone had reminded me of. They thought it was President Faust, and I was like, yeah, that sounds right. I went to my mom, and I was like, actually, no, it was President Packer. And the quote is essentially that if you want to know what it's going to be like in the last days, just read Helaman. My goodness, does that not sound very, very accurate? So I happened to be reading it in Helaman 7 Monday morning. And this scripture stands out to me. I'm like, holy cow. So I ended up screenshotting it. I actually read a physical copy, but I was like, I got to pull this up. I highlighted it, screenshot it, put it on Twitter, put it on Facebook, Instagram. And it definitely resonated. This thing kind of blew up on Twitter. A lot of people liking it. A lot of people retweeting it. Not a lot of people. Some guy brought up the church and the tithing money. I'm like, okay, not relevant. But anyway, a lot of people were like, wow, this hits. This hits hard. Here's the scripture. It's Helaman 7:5, and this is what it says. Condemning the righteous because of their righteousness, letting the guilty and the wicked go unpunished because of their money, and moreover, to be held in office at the head of government, to rule and do according to their wills, that they might get gain and glory of the world, and moreover, that they might the more easily commit adultery and steal and kill and do according to their own wills. Cannot believe how prescient that is. Just spot on. Amazing, beautiful, inspired. I look at the scripture and I'm like, these are the times we're living in. And we're talking chief judge after chief judge murdered. There was literally a plot to kill Supreme Court Justice Kavanaugh just within the last few weeks. In Helaman 7, there's like one verse where like two chief judges die one after the other. It's like the chief judge and then chief judge's son, just boom, boom. And you read this verse and you're like, condemning the righteous because of their righteousness, right? Calling good evil and evil good. This is the world we're living in right now. we are evil for this reason or that reason. And the one that just hits right now specifically is we're evil because we want to take away a woman's right to choose. It's like, yeah, a right to choose to kill. Yeah, it happens to be tethered to their body, but it's still another human we're talking about. So in what world do we want to live in that the rights of one person would usurp that of another in any context whatsoever? Anyway, sorry, I'm getting a little passionate right now. I think I've maxed out the passion for this podcast already, this episode specifically. Anyway, I wanted to share that verse because it definitely hit with a lot of people. It hit with me, and I think it might have hit with you, hopefully. Like, it is, it's there. We're living in these times. It's crazy. Best we can do is really just let our principles shine. Hopefully lift each other up. Definitely love others. Never let their love or their definition of love dictate how we show love. But just do what we can there. Display our best intellectual honesty and keep moving forward. Anyway, I love you all. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Hope you all have a great 4th of July weekend with your loved ones, family, close friends, whatever. I'm definitely looking forward to it. A lot of family's going to be in town for me. It's going to be great to see them all. I love this country. God bless America. God bless all of you. We'll catch you next week.
There's an hourglass sitting on my table. I'm watching as everything's changing. My mind goes to a different time. Old love, I remember falling so madly. There must have been magic in the valley and a rhythm in the night. 'Cause I could almost see it. Did you fade right out of view? If it takes time.